Namaskar.
Bienvenue.
I'm from Bangalore, India.
Dublin, Ireland.
Turkey.
The Philippines.
This is Feet into Worlds.
I came here to study.
To work.
To volunteer.
Build a life of my own.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
Esto es Con los pies en dos mundos.
Bienvenido burada, bienvenido orada yaşıyorum.
Welcome to Feet into Worlds.
In Turkey, Muslim women students are not permitted to wear headscarves in school. So a number of young Turkish women have chosen to study in the United States.
After I got covered, I didn't want to take it off every day. It is my religion. It is my freedom. I feel lucky that I don't have to take my scarf off in America when I go to school.
I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds. Today, we're talking about the intersection of education, religious freedom, and immigration for young Turkish women. I'm here with Nejla Demirci. She's a Turkish television journalist based here in New York and a Feet in Two Worlds Education Reporting Fellow. Hi, Nejla.
Hi, John.
Nejla, how is it that Turkey, a predominantly Muslim country, does not allow women and girls to cover their heads when they're in school?
John, for many students of Turkey, women's dress has become the issue that defines whether a Muslim is a secularist or religious. And the issue of girls wearing headscarves in school is a powerful symbol of this very struggle. Even though 95% of Turkey's population is Muslim, still Turkey is a secular democracy, and that means there is a strict separation of religion and government in the Turkish constitution.
And when did the issue of women wearing headscarves in school first come up in Turkey?
This specific issue of headscarf ban started right after the military took over the government in 1980s. And around that time, the demographic picture of Turkey was changing. Rural people migrated to the cities, bringing with them more conservative religious practices. And all of a sudden, religious people became much more visible in urban settings.
In the cities.
Right. This disturbed the secular elite in the country and eventually gave rise to seeing the headscarf as a problem. And from then, around mid-1990s, it became a much more serious problem. And for the first time, girls wearing headscarf couldn't get into universities.
Now, Nejla, you interviewed two sisters who came to New York to attend high school and college specifically because of the headscarf ban. Tell me about them.
Sumeyye Sideli, she's 20 years old and she studies at New York Institute of Technology. Her sister, Safiye, is 18 years old and she's graduating from Brooklyn Amity High School this summer. They live together in New York with their friends and their parents, often visit them from Turkey. Sumeyye and Safiye both started using headscarves when they were young, teenagers. Sumeyye was about 13 and Safiye was about 14 years old. I asked them about their decision to wear the headscarf and what it meant for them.
I decided to use a headscarf when I was in middle school. My family was against that in the beginning because I was too young for it. But they were okay. It was my choice, my own choice. Nobody forced me to use headscarf. There are verses in Quran that says that we need to use headscarf, we need to cover our hair. So I thought it's necessary. I wanted to practice my religion in my life. I was already praying 5 times during the day and I was doing other duties too. And, you know, this is one of the duties.
It was my own decision, like hers. I was 14 and I thought that I need to do this. The verse is telling that, tell the believing woman that they should restrain their gaze from looking at the man whom is lawful for them to marry and from others' private parts and guard their private parts and that they shouldn't display their charms except that which is reserved for itself.
That was Sumeyye and Safiye Sedili. Obviously, the sisters feel very deeply about wearing the headscarf and about being observant Muslims. But it's a big commitment to move to the U.S. to attend school as a teenager away from your family and your hometown. They must have the support of their family, though.
They do, John. They do have their family support. And what happens is they're away from their family, friends and loved ones just because of this reason. So they're quite frustrated. And even though one day they want to go back to pursue their career, they say if they feel any threat against their headscarf, they would come back here. Again, here's Safiye. She's the younger sister who is graduating from high school.
I have friends in Turkey who is wearing headscarves. They are just so sad about it, but it's hopeless. If they had the opportunity to come here like me, I believe that they wouldn't think of it. They just come here. I feel lucky that I don't have to take my scarf off in America when I go to school.
Nejla, how did the U.S. become a destination for Turkish Muslim women students? Freedom of religion is written into the U.S. Constitution, of course, but on the other hand, ever since the 9/11 attacks, there's been a lot of anti-Muslim sentiment in this country.
John, I talked to Mujahid Bilici, who's an expert on Islam in Turkey and also focuses on Islam in America in the post-9/11 era. He's also assistant sociology professor at John Jay College, and his book is forthcoming, titled Fighting Mecca in America.
And what did Professor Bilici have to say about this?
He says that public sentiment is temporary and even understandable, but on the whole, women in America can pursue their right to religion, and that includes the right to wear a headscarf or hijab.
In post-9/11 climate, Islam became suspicious in this country, unfortunately, and there has been a lot of backlash, of course. There are, you know, ignorant people, there are people who are acting on sentiment and prejudice and so on. So there are cases of discrimination, like cases of assault, people not being accepted to certain institutions, being denied employment because they are wearing hijab and so on. But I think they don't undermine the overall fact that in America, hijab as a basic right, it's protected in this country. When it's before law, it is protected. So the Turkish women with hijab, actually, they fall into this common post-9/11 atmosphere, and they suffer from that problem here as well. But still, it's compared to what they were experiencing in Turkey, it's very little amount of stress, I would say.
Now, Nejla, one thing we should be clear about is that the option to study in the U.S. is really only available to young Turkish women whose families can afford to send them away to school.
Right, John. In fact, Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan's daughters are amongst girls who came here. The most popular politician in a long time in the country, and his daughters couldn't attend college in their own country, so they had to come to the United States. A great number of girls went to Europe. Austria was a hot spot for them, and small percent of them came to United States.
And is the desire to wear the headscarf at school the only reason that they've decided to study outside of Turkey?
Well, with these girls' actions, I think there is another reason to that. It's actually seeking for basic human rights to live with your choice of dress, which you can't do in your home country.
Now, what about the Turkish people? What do they think about the headscarf ban?
John, actually, 70% of the country support the right to wear headscarf in the schools. And also, we could say half of the women population wear headscarf in Turkey. It could be for religious reason or just traditional reasons.
So it's not always for religious reasons.
No, it's not, John. It's a quite traditional thing, seeing a headscarf on a woman's head. It's a common practice, but one could ask how such a common practice in a country be banned. I ask this to Mujahid Bilici, who says that the headscarf is seen by the ruling elite as an old practice that has no place in a modern Turkish society.
I think that headscarf is has become a symbol, but it is not the symbol of people who are wearing it, because they are just being themselves. It is a symbol for people who see it from outside and who objectify it and treat it as a pathology, as a disease, as a problem, as an expression, manifestation of backwardness, failure to modernize, to become like them. And so it's a product of elite resentment of masses in Muslim society. And I have referred to this in the past as cultural self-colonization. In other words, Turkish elite were deeply influenced by 19th century modernization and the rise of Europe as the superpower of the world and technology and all that. And there was a common understanding shared by even religious people themselves that the reason for failure of Eastern Muslim societies is religion. That there is something wrong, that, you know, something needs to be done. And so for them, history has to unfold in a certain way. There's a certain direction, and they think that the elite are already at the destination. They're waiting for the masses to arrive there. And when they arrive there, they should be like them, not different.
Let's go back to the story of Sumeya and Safiya Sedili, the two sisters that you interviewed. Nejla, have they faced challenges here, or have they run into incidents where they were discriminated against because they wore the hijab?
John, the girls both actually expected to have some kind of incidents on discrimination. But so far, no negative experience on the discrimination issue. So in fact, Sumeya said their experience has been the opposite.
I haven't faced any discrimination against a headscarf in the United States. When they see that scarf, you know, they have more respect to us. When they talk, when, you know, it's like they have some distance because I need that distance because I'm Muslim.
So both sisters haven't faced discrimination themselves, but we know that harassments and even assault to women in headscarves happens in the U.S., unfortunately. And this, as Mujahid explained to me, is a result of the headscarf being seen as a cultural threat.
Is there a connection between the experiences of these young women who go to study in Europe and the U.S. because of the headscarf ban and what's happening in the Arab world now, the transformation of the Muslim world known as the Arab Spring?
There are similarities and differences, John. It's different because Turkish girls wearing headscarf are seeking for religious freedom, whereas in Arab countries, Muslim youth is protesting for political freedom. But there are also similarities in the sense that young Muslims are changing in a way that has never happened before. Like the headscarf ban in Turkey, Arab dictatorships also have pushed young Muslims to learn more about global culture, and they started to travel more. They learn Western languages.
And what's been the consequence of that?
It has encouraged something that the parents of those young Muslims never had, a level of confidence in themselves. Because they now believe that they can change the world. They can change their world. Mujahid Bilici also made a great point.
A lot of behaviors of rulers, dictators, old elites, their behaviors pushed religious people to learn to absorb the language of multiculturalism, democracy, human rights, and exposure to modern skills and capabilities, and all this converged and produced this kind of explosion that is ongoing, and I think more and more of it is going to happen. Turkey had its own revolution in an evolutionary form through a lot of suffering, and I think these hijabi women are a prime example of that suffering.
Now let's go back once again to Sumeya and Safiya, the sisters you spoke to. What about their future? What do they see?
They're pretty happy here. But of course, it's not home, so they would rather be living and going to school in Turkey. But for them, religious freedom is even more important. Here's Sumeya.
Even though I'm getting a good education in here, it is better than Turkey. I want to be in my country. I miss them a lot. But, you know, because of the headscarf rules and because of this situation, I don't want to go there. I don't want to be the person like that, have to open, you know, her hair every single day. You know, it's not a freedom. If I go there, I will not be a free Muslim woman.
So see, John, it's a very sensitive topic for them, and they were forced to make a very hard choice at a very early age in their life. And Sumeya told me she wants to have a professional career in Turkey. But they also both know, they believe that the headscarf ban will continue as a symbol of secular society for many more years.
Nejla, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Nejla Demirci is a Turkish television journalist and a Feet in Two Worlds Education Reporting Fellow. The producers for this segment are Dimple Patel, Jocelyn Gonzalez, and Sarah Kate Kramer. Our engineer is Chad Bernhard. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the New York Community Trust and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, with additional support from the Mertz Gilmore Foundation and the Cyrus Fund. This program was produced in association with the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and CUNY TV. Feet in Two Worlds brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio and the web. We are a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Visit our website at news.feetintoworlds.org.